Omaha Public Radio presents another lecture program from Creighton University on Noon Forum. We'll hear a talk by Protas Okwalo, a Jesuit priest, holder of the Anna and Donald Waite Chair in Jesuit Education at Creighton, and visiting lecturer in Pastoral Theology and Missiology at the Capuchin Franciscan Institute of Philosophy and Theology in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. Father Okwalo will present the annual Waite Chair Lecture. He'll speak on the topic, Conversation, an Event of Faith Formation. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Wednesday afternoon, March 30th, 2016, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of Creighton University, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the speaker is Edward O'Connor, Provost of Creighton University.
It is truly my pleasure to welcome all of you to the 2015-2016 Waite Chair Lecture. It's also my distinct pleasure to introduce the Reverend Protas Okwalo, who is currently serving as the Anna and Donald Waite Chair in Jesuit Education. Hyder College of Business alumnus Donald Waite and his wife Anna established the endowed faculty chair with the goal of augmenting the Jesuit presence on campus. The chair brings visiting Jesuits to Creighton to invigorate the Jesuit and Catholic intellectual tradition across the university. The Waite Chair is not restricted to a particular school or college. The visiting scholars who hold the chair, accomplished Jesuits from around the world, represent the full spectrum of academic disciplines. Father Okwalo comes to Creighton from the Eastern Africa province of the Society of Jesus. He served as the former Dean of Studies and Lecturer of Methods in Social Work Practice at the Ethiopian Catholic University of St. Thomas Aquinas, and was a visiting lecturer of Pastoral Theology and Missiology at the Franciscan Institute of Philosophy and Theology, both in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. Father Okwalo received bachelor's degrees from l'Institut de Philosophie in the Democratic Republic of Congo and Hikima College in Nairobi, Kenya. And he also holds two master's and his doctoral degree from Boston College. Father Okwalo is committed to personal and societal transformation. At Creighton, he's been teaching a graduate course this year, Evangelization Through Mercy and Reconciliation, as a member of the Department of Theology. His current research in Conversation as an Event of Faith Formation will serve as the title of his lecture today. On a personal note, it's been a pleasure to have Father Okwalo on campus this year. Took a little bit to get him here, but we were glad he, finally able to join us on campus. And I just want to say, on behalf of our office, we love every day when he comes to visit. His generous smile and his infectious laugh brightens up our day in our office, and we are blessed to have him on campus as a colleague this year. So, without further ado, I'd like to introduce the speaker, the 2015-16 Waite Chair Lecture, Father Protas Okwalo. Welcome, Father.
I would like to begin where I should end, with gratitude. I would like to say thank you, a big thank you to the president of Creighton University, the rector of the Jesuit community here, and each of you here present, for giving me the opportunity to do this research and to teach here. I cannot thank you enough. And because I cannot thank you enough, I will forever be indebted to you. I want to do six things. I will mention my inspiration, the inspiration for this work. I will define what I mean by a conversational approach to faith formation, by explaining what I mean by conversation and explaining what I understand by faith formation. Then I'll discuss with you why. I'll talk about the basis of the approach. I'll explain the process itself and finally finish with inviting you to give me your views and contributions. Otherwise, it isn't a conversation. What is the inspiration of the approach? It is a write-up from a Tanzanian educator. He said, life is such an endless research problem that no student can ever come out of any educational institution with ready-made solutions to it. The best that a student can hope to come out with are techniques of learning and thinking about any problem life might present. My technique is conversation. That's what guides what I do. I'm not always successful, but that is what guides what I do. It is informed by Hans-Georg Gadamer, a German philosopher who is credited with the redevelopment of hermeneutics. Most specifically, it is informed by his notion of Gespräch. That is a German word for conversation. I don't even know if I have pronounced it properly. As a process of coming to understanding. You know, there was a time I was in Boston, and I preached on that day. And I thought I had done a very good job. You know, where you do something and you feel like, yeah, I think I have nailed it. And then I come out, I'm greeting people coming out, and someone tells me, look, I'm going to give you just 1 year. After 1 year, your homilies will be perfect. I looked at him and said, no, it ain't happening. I have been here for 5 years. So if it's a question of the Bostonian accent, I'm not getting it. Conversation translates into Gespräch, translates into English as conversation, derived from the Latin word conversatio, which is also derived from conversare. Conversare has many meanings. If you read Gadamer's work, the meanings that come out are talking with and turning around. Just as we are talking now. But there's also turning around, meaning change. If we converse nicely, change is possible. And if you want to know where conversation takes place, you want to go to a salon for making hair for ladies, or a barbershop for cutting hair. Luckily, I don't have to go there these days. But you want to go to a barbershop. That is where people talk freely. No inhibitions. No fear that I may be beaten up or someone may kill me. People just talk. Talk freely. That is what you need to have in mind. Now, but another thing is needed. When we are talking of Gadamer, we are talking of something else. We are talking of his critique to the age of the Enlightenment. We are talking his critique of two other approaches to learning, the subjective rational approach and the objective scientific approach. His notion of understanding as conversation is proposed against those two approaches, two broad approaches to learning, the subjective rational approach and the objective scientific approach. The subjective rational approach says that we are talking Descartes. They say, hey, we want to base learning on the subject, on the person, on the rationality of the individual. And we want to remove from the process of learning subjective biases. And the objective scientific approach wants to do something similar. But they want to remove, in our case, an object of history from its historical location in order to arrive at an understanding that is objective. Gadamer says, no, it can't happen. If the object of understanding you want to understand is a human, a historical object, such as faith, you can't do it. If you are learning the faith of a particular tradition, in our case Christianity, you cannot leave your understanding behind. You cannot leave your values out in the open. You cannot leave your ideological biases behind you. You cannot leave your concerns outside in order to capture the understanding of that Christian something, whatever it is, objectively without your biases. No, we bring our biases to a process of understanding. And we cannot also remove a historical object from its location in order to capture it objectively. Gadamer says no. Understanding of historical objects cannot be objective or neutral. We bring those all the time and every day. And so he refers to the process of understanding as bringing together what we bring with us. And he refers to what we bring with us as horizons of understanding. And a historical object will also have its horizon of understanding. So that understanding for him becomes a fusion of those horizons. Horizon may sound complicated, but it isn't. It's just the worldviews we bring. I'm going to call them perspectives. So that where Gadamer talks about a fusion of horizons, I'll talk about perspectival transformation, the transformation of the perspectives we bring to a process of understanding, whatever process that is. In our case, we are talking about a process of coming to an understanding of faith, Christian faith, to be specific. I have friends of mine, Patterson and company, who in their book, this one, Crucial Conversations, talk about those horizons of understanding as pools of meaning, personal pools of meaning. And they say each one brings those. I read them. Each of us enters into conversations with our opinions, feelings, experiences about the topic at hand. This makes up our personal pool of meaning. This not only informs us, but also propels our every action. It propels our every action. So the horizons of understanding that Gadamer talks about, the worldviews that I talk about, and the life perspectives I talk about propel our every action. You are not here because you had nothing to do. You had many things to do. But you have chosen to be here. So that inside those perspectives of life or of understanding, I want to add practical wisdom. The capacity we have to look at situations and make choices. We are people of choices. We are always in situations where we have to choose what to do. At any one time, you have chosen to be here, and I am grateful. But someone else is missing you out there. So that is what a horizon of understanding does, what a worldview does, what a perspective in life does, what a pool of meaning does, propels our every action. So that at every moment of our life, we have to choose. To choose one thing or another. So we have said this and we can say it again. Just as a human being, a historical human being, brings their horizon of understanding to a process of learning, so also does the object to be understood, in our case, faith, bring their horizon of understanding to that process. And that horizon also comprises values, knowledge, ideological biases, concerns, comprise those. Faith in Jesus, for example. If you are teaching about Jesus Christ, you will teach Jesus Christ, yes. But whatever you say will have in them your values. how you understand Jesus. There will be some ideological biases in there. There will be concerns of the location where you have come from. And that's why sometimes in Africa we say missionaries are good, they came, but they came with their culture also. They can't do otherwise. They can't leave their culture behind. But neither can that person who seeks to come to an understanding of the Christian message. They can't leave their cultures behind. And that's why we sometimes talk about syncretism. It's not all evil, it's just part of us. Okay. And so, the process of understanding for Gadamer is captured by this metaphor of conversation. Another metaphor he uses is a game to describe his process of understanding. Like a game, understanding then doesn't become something we do. We are still in the realm of humanities. It is something we engage in time and in place. And I talked to a friend of mine one day, and we were discussing about soccer, how people become fanatic about watching soccer, and how people here become fanatic about watching a baseball game or even football. In our case, we are saying, don't sit behind someone who is fanatical about watching soccer. They may kick you because they get so engaged in it that when someone is going to score, they kick. Not knowing they are not in the field. They are out there watching on TV. So we get engaged in it. So that we are bringing two processes together. Horizons, perspectives, world views. We arrive then at a description of a conversational process of faith formation as this. A process that seeks the transformation of participant perspectives. And that process includes four key elements. One of them is they need to pay attention to the conditions necessary for that process of understanding. Conditions without which we cannot talk about a conversational approach to understanding faith in our case. And these two conditions are the two things. One, the things I have mentioned already. One of them is life perspectives. That is a condition for a conversational approach to faith formation. Giving due attention to our life perspectives. And if we accept the existence of such a thing as a life perspective, a horizon of understanding, or a worldview, then the logical thing that follows is interaction, a give and take between participants in this conversation, someone who seeks to learn and someone who seeks to teach. There has to be some interaction, a give and take between the two. That leads to a second element, a transformation of the perspectives. Gadamer talks of a fusion of horizons, talking of the transformation of the perspectives, a dovetailing of what we bring to the conversational process and what the object we want to understand brings to the process. The learning that comes out, the outcome, is what I want to call praxis. It's a combination of two things. A combination of the perspective and the action in which it finds expression. Remember, we were talking earlier about pools of meaning becoming guides for our lives. You don't see it except in the action that you perform. Show me your faith, we will later see, without your actions. And I, by my actions, will show you my faith. And if the approach is up or is conversation, then you can't close it. We converse with ourselves even after this conversation. I'll be conversing with myself. I'll be looking back and saying, okay, now, what did I say there? There is an openness. So there are these four elements. One, conditions necessary for the understanding, that is the perspectives and interaction. And then the learning itself is a transformation of perspectives. The outcome is praxis. And of course, there will always be an openness. So that I can sum it up with this formula. It is not a formula for taking us to the moon. People have already gone to the moon, not even to Saturn. But it is C is equal to PI plus, PI bracket P, T, P, and O. P standing for perspectives, I for interaction, T for transformation, P for praxis, and then O, openness. Faith. I'm talking about Christian faith today. Not that Islam is not important. I'm just limited to this because this is where I belong. I have to locate myself somewhere. And when I talk of faith formation, three things come to mind. Three dimensions. The first one is intellectual. Just now we are engaged in something that I can refer to as an intellectual exchange around the subject of conversation as an approach to faith formation. But if I'm about becoming a Christian, Christians are not born, they become. So there is an ontological dimension to learning faith. We are not born Christian, we become Christians. And if we are Christians, it must show in how we live. It must show in behavior. Gustavo Gutierrez expresses all three dimensions as an orientation toward life. And I add that is grounded in a loving God who requires love of believers. So all that to explain the approach. Why am I interested in a conversational approach? There are many reasons for this. I zero in on just five. One of them is the reality of exclusions in our world that Pope Francis refers to in chapter 2 of Evangelii Nuntiandi. We have politics of exclusion, economics of exclusion, relationships that are sometimes exclusive, and the list continues. A second reason why is the separation between church and life that Sandra Schneider refers to in this book, the separation of church and life, where we go to church on Sunday, and then we go home, and we leave church there a little bit, and then we go back on Sunday. I wouldn't be mentioning us if I hadn't read Sandra Schneider's, and I thank Dennis for showing it to me not so long ago. And then a missionary response, a response to the missionary mandate in Acts chapter 1, verse 8. The one we are aware of that we talk about a lot is Matthew chapter 28, verses 18 to 20. Go therefore to all, the whole world and proclaim the good news, baptizing everyone in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. That one is all very good, but there is another one that is even more important because it is more exclusive. Acts chapter 1, verse 8. The Holy Spirit will come upon you and you will become my witnesses. You will become my witnesses in Jerusalem, in all of Judea and Samaria, and then to the ends of the earth. So that the missionary is not just that person who goes out, but each one who accepts Jesus becomes a missionary. And we do that work through witness. There is an inadequacy of the predominant didactic instructional method for this task of making witnesses. And I'm proposing conversation instead. You'll tell me whether it is worth it later on. And then I believe in the potential of a conversational approach. I don't want to explain that. I would be preaching to a choir. Because you know all about democracy. This is all about democracy. Bringing a democratic process to a process of faith formation. I was talking to a friend not so long ago, and he asked, excuse me, can you tell me something? What is the basis of this conversational approach you are talking about? What theology do you ground it on? And I said, I don't only have a theological basis. I also have a cultural basis and a biblical basis. The cultural basis is what Africans refer to as the process of the palaver. I'm talking of Africa south of the Sahara. There are many Africas, but Africa south of the Sahara. Africa north of the Sahara is slightly different. It's allied to the Middle East. But a lot of cultures in Africa south of the Sahara have something they refer to as a process of the palaver. To cut that long definition short, that is an exercise of sitting down, if you want, under a tree to discuss life issues. Say there is a drought, or there is theft in the community, or there is a problem of governance. Africans sat down under a tree and discussed those issues that affected their lives for the purpose of reaching an understanding by consensus and making a decision and putting that decision into practice. The discussion alone is not enough. It is not here a question of majority rule. It's a question here of trying to arrive at a consensus, deciding to act upon the decision arrived at, and then acting upon that decision. If a solution is found that works and sorts out the issue under conversation, well and good. If not, they sit to discuss again. And sometimes the end would be a refusal to agree. They didn't always arrive at a consensus. They would accept that we can't reach an agreement on this one. In A Long Walk to Freedom, Mandela refers to this process as democracy par excellence. But it was democracy for men. Women were not allowed in those meetings those days. These days they are. But those days, the days when Mandela was referring to it as a democracy par excellence, no, women did not attend these meetings. So a palaver needs to be tweaked a little bit to introduce everybody in it. Another drawback is it's not always easy to make it cross-cultural, but still it is a process that can ground this for me. I mean, a lot in Kenya we use this process, a lot, the palaver process a lot, so I can propose it for us. But here we use democracy, so I'm not feeling too bad about proposing palaver, the palaver process, as a ground for the approach I propose. There is a theological basis for it. The theology of inculturation. The best definition I have got of this theology is from Thomas Groom of Boston College. He says, inculturation is a dialectical encounter between Christian faith and a particular culture in which the culture is affirmed, challenged, and transformed towards the reign of God, and in which Christian faith is likewise affirmed, challenged, and enriched by this unique instance of its realization. The words I like are affirmed, but also challenged, and then transformed. Affirmed, challenged, and enriched. That is a ground, a basis for the approach I propose. Another basis is biblical. I find it in the conversation between Jesus and the Samaritan woman. But it can also be found in that passage that puts before us a conversation between Jesus and the two disciples on the road to Emmaus. In each of those conversations, there are those four elements I was talking about, and then there is change at the end. I will not play this now, it will be played later. How does it happen? How does a conversational approach bring about understanding? We want to recall the formula that can't help us get to the moon. Gadamer proposes that it happens through translation, but which is moved forward by a Platonic dialectic of the question and answer. Then grammatically, it can be represented that way, so that understanding happens somewhere there in the middle. Wouldn't it be nice if Israelis and Palestinians could find a common goal? Wouldn't it be nice if here in the U.S., the Republicans in Congress and Democrats would find a common goal? Wouldn't it be nice if Kenyans, the Kenyan tribes, could elect a president that is accountable to them by coming together? Wouldn't it be nice if catechists and catechumens focus on a common understanding of Christian faith? Would it not be nice? Conditions that can make all those things work. Participant perspectives. Giving due attention to all this, to the knowledge, the values, the attitudes, the concerns, and the ideological biases that we may have. Giving attention to them rather than jettisoning them. Can't jettison them. Give them attention. That is a condition, number one, if you want to find a common ground. Condition number two, interaction. And there are many elements that enable conversation, enable interaction. One is respect for all partners. You know the opposite. One is a capacity to listen. Sometimes I get into a conversation and I'm waiting for the person talking to finish so I can say what I want to say. When are you finishing? Because I want to talk also. And then we have openness. Openness is a willingness to learn. If you don't have a willingness to learn, don't start a conversation with someone. Let them, allow them to do their own business. Don't bother them trying to converse with them. You won't get anything from them because you have refused from the beginning. Then there is a capacity for critique. As I'm talking, I'm sure there are a lot of critiques coming up. That is not the way. No, that is not right. We are like that, human beings. That also helps conversation, a capacity for critique, but only if it is accompanied by a capacity for self-critique. A possibility, a capacity to say, yeah, I didn't know that one. Something like that. Okay. Other aids to interaction are these. We need an active participant in Christianity, in the process of learning Christianity. We need people who become active in the process of their own faith formation, who take responsibility for that, taking responsibility for one's learning. If we have people who are just sitting down their way and taking notes, conversation ain't happening, it won't happen. And that puts before us a challenge. Before I started this work, I would have syllabi and I would describe myself as an instructor. These days, I use a different word. I use facilitator to challenge me into taking Paulo Freire seriously. Paulo Freire tells us, who are teachers, to consider ourselves as students, even as we are engaged in a process of teaching. And it challenges students to become teachers, even as they are engaged in the process of learning. A teacher of students, and students who are teachers of their teacher. That aids interaction. And then we need a conversational space. I borrowed this from Ann Baker. It's an internet source. And they say, they talk of a physical space that aids conversation. Just now you are seated and I'm standing and I'm feeling very uncomfortable because I know some of you are more experienced and knowledgeable than I am. I should be sitting down. It's just that this is the way it is today. It won't be that way every day. See how the Congress sits, where you can see everybody? That is what we are talking about by conversation space that is physical. And then temporal, that has a physical dimension. Temporally, talking requires a lot of time. Democracy requires a lot of time. And if you are Donald Trump and Hillary and my friend Sanders and Kasich, you know it also requires a lot of money. I don't know if they sleep. That's what democracy requires. Plenty of time. If you don't have time, don't start a conversation. You won't succeed. And then there is another dimension to it. There is an emotional dimension. By emotional dimension, I understand creating space for people to approach you. There are some people who are very easy to approach. There are others who are not. There was a time I just presided at a Eucharist celebration and I went to a car in order to go back home and somebody approaches me and says, Father, I need confession. I said, can we go back to the church? No, we can have it right here. I don't have the, you know what, it doesn't matter. I need conversation right now. That is confession right now. That is trust. Humbled me. I'm humbled to this very day by that level of trust. Another example and another experience to illustrate what I mean by an emotional dimension to a conversational space is this. There was a time in my life when I was studying at Boston College, Kevin knows. When I was in a crisis and I was wondering now, am I going to remain a priest or am I going to quit? And lo and behold, this couple comes to me and says, Father, could you preside at our wedding mass? I looked at them and said, you know what? I don't know if I'll be a priest maybe 1 or 2, 3 months from now. And they asked me, excuse me, have you signed the papers? I said, no. And they said, please sign the papers after our wedding. I will be going to see them in Boston before I go back home. A cycle. Let's talk about a cycle. Just a cycle of transformation. That cycle moves by translation as its mode, and a dialectic of the question and response. And it has three levels. There is a eureka level, that is a level of discovery. There is a translation level, which is also an affirmation level, and it has a level of appropriation. I'm going to explain very quickly using an example. That would best be explained by my brother Chucks. It is from a story. A story written, a novel written by Chinua Achebe. He's laughing. He doesn't want to come and help me. A novel written by Chinua Achebe. There is a young man in that novel, a son to the main... The main what? The main character. Had lost character. The main character. Nwoye is a son to the main character. And when we meet Nwoye, several things have happened. A member of Nwoye's tribe has killed the wife of a member of another tribe. And instead of going to war, that other tribe has given a young woman to be married by the husband whose wife was killed. And they have also given a young man called Ikemefuna as ransom. Ikemefuna comes to live in the home of Nwoye. He's older than Nwoye. So he becomes a little brother, an elder brother to Nwoye. Then one day, he is killed. Killed by Nwoye's own father. Nwoye didn't feel nice about that. Another thing he was not comfortable with was in his ethnic group, twins were thrown out as bad omens. You give birth to twins, throw them out in the forest. So Nwoye has this in mind, has these two things in mind, things he does not like. The killing is of his elder brother, Ikemefuna, and the throwing away of twins. He has those in mind when he encounters Christianity. He is drawn to Christianity, not because he understood the doctrine of the Trinity. That didn't make sense to him. It doesn't make sense to a lot of people. He was drawn by a song that the Christian community sang. He was drawn by the poetry, he says, poetry of the new religion. Something felt in the marrow. A hymn about brothers who sat in darkness and in fear. The words of the hymn were like the drops of frozen rain melting on the dry palate of the parching earth. Nwoye leaves his culture, in brackets, and goes and becomes a Christian. That is a eureka moment. Something in Christianity captivates him, and he decides to go. Gadamer says, a conversation will not happen unless something addresses you. It may be a word. It may be a song, as in his case. It may be a practice. It may be an action. It won't happen. Conversation won't happen. It won't begin unless something addresses you. As I was saying earlier, some things that tell... clicks in the mind and say, yeah, that is new. Or Eureka, Archimedes, I have discovered. Then we proceed to the second level. I call it the level of the moment of translation. When something clicks and you get attracted by Christianity and you go to become a Christian, you will enter a catechetical process where... Elements of Christianity are put before you in order to understand. Gadamer says we will understand those by a process of translation. But translation here is not just putting what you hear into words. We must subject what is put before us to two critiques. What Sandra Schneider refers to as a critique of retrieval. That is, assess what is put before you to kick away the bad attitudes. In the song we just mentioned, there is a reference to African cultures as Africans who live the culture we talked about as people living in darkness and in fear. That darkness thing is not something nice. Referring to Africans as people living in darkness is not a good thing. We need to jettison that. But within the element of darkness itself, there is also an ideology. If people are living in darkness, then you bring them light. And that is how Christianity has sometimes been accused of a mission of civilization, when it should be a mission of preaching the love of God. So we need to rid ourselves of those. When we do, what is left can then be affirmed and then appropriated by the person learning. And what is appropriated expands their perspective in life, expands their horizon. It becomes a new pool of meaning that guides their life. What is the outcome? The outcome is transformation. The transformation of the initial perspective. And when it leads to action, a combination of the two, of the perspective and the action, is best captured by the word praxis. You can refer to James chapter 2, verse 18 again. Show me your faith without actions, and I, by my actions, will show you my faith. Let's do something, some listening here, to illustrate what we've been talking about by using the conversation between Jesus and the Samaritan woman.
Give me to drink.
How is it that thou, a Jew, askest drink of me, which am a woman of Samaria? The Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans.
If thou knewest the gift of God, and who it is that saith to thee, give me to drink, thou wouldst have asked of him, and he would have given thee living water.
Sir, thou hast nothing to draw with. The well is deep. From whence then hast thou this living water? Art thou greater than our father Jacob, who gave us this well, and drank thereof himself and his children and his cattle?
Whosoever drinketh of this water shall thirst again. But whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst. The water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up into everlasting life.
Sir, give me of this water, that I thirst not, neither come hither to draw.
Go, call thy husband, and come hither.
I have no husband.
Thou hast well said, I have no husband. For thou hast had five husbands.
Sir, I perceive that thou art a prophet. Our fathers worshipped in this mountain. And ye say that it is in Jerusalem that men ought to worship.
Woman, believe me, the hour cometh when ye shall neither in this mountain nor yet at Jerusalem worship the Father. Ye worship ye know not what. We know what we worship, and salvation is of the Jews. And the hour cometh, and now is, when the true worshippers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth. For the Father seeketh such to worship him. For unto such hath God promised his Spirit, and they who worship him must worship in spirit and in truth.
I know that Messiah cometh, which is called Christ. And And when he has come, he will tell us all things.
I that speak unto thee am he.
That is not how it ends. I had a bigger one, but my censor said it's too long. So, but we do know how it ends. She goes back to her village to bring people to see someone who told her everything she ever did. In this conversation, she is treated with respect. She is made a conversation partner, and her concerns about a place of worship is addressed. But she also encounters the Messiah. On her part, she is open to learning. Sees Jesus first as a Jew, then sees Jesus as so, and Jesus as a prophet, and finally as a Messiah. She is changed by this encounter. She is not sure if Jesus is the Messiah, but she believes enough to leave her water jar and to risk ridicule by going into town to call others to Jesus. She enters into that conversation as a Samaritan woman and lives as a Christian, as a witness. There is an element of openness in this encounter. Even as we call the Samaritan woman a witness, her statement, "Could he be the Messiah?" tells us that her faith seems partial and incomplete. But is this not what faith is about? Discovering and living it in specific circumstances of one's life, while remaining open to further discovery. A conversational approach to faith formation is not without challenges. In my context, there would be two big challenges. How do you get people in faith formation to become active participants in the process of their own faith formation? And how can you get experts, the faith formators like me who call themselves experts, to become facilitators of the faith formation process? There will be other questions, but I rest my case here.
Thank you, Father Qualo. I believe we have some time for some questions.
I think so. You'd mentioned conditions on which to learn and begin that faith formation process. How do you know if a person, so on our end, we talk about listening and being able to understand and creating a safe environment, but on their end of openness and willing to share, how do you know that going into the conversation that is there, if that makes sense?
How do you know if those conditions are there?
Yeah.
What I would use are, you know, if there is openness, if there is a capacity to question, those five things that I mentioned, openness and critique and a willingness to learn, a capacity for self-critique, all those, if all those are there, then you are having a conversation. If someone tells you, I know that already, a conversation is not going to take place. Mainly those five elements. Okay. A capacity to listening, critiquing, being open to critique, being willing to learn. Those ones, those five, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Maybe two questions. Gadamer's main book is called Truth and Method, and yet at the beginning you talk about, you know, not criticizing the objective approaches, and yet isn't the goal of conversation truth? Isn't the idea, or what's the relationship maybe between the fusion of horizons and truth? And this may also relate to this, but I was struck by the case of the conversation, you know, when you talk about Nelson Mandela, and then, but no women were involved in the conversation. And it seems to me that this whole method, doesn't it require something like a, you know, a critical theory to be exposing limitations on the conditions. I think some years ago there was a kind of debate between Jürgen Habermas and Gadamer, kind of on that point.
I didn't expound on that, but critique is what Jürgen Habermas directed toward Gadamer. When he talks of translation as a model of understanding, and if translation is understood only as putting into words something someone else has said, the danger is to accept without critique bad attitudes I was talking about. But it is also, the danger is also to accept without critique ideological content. So from that conversation is where I got these two critiques that are necessary. Okay, and the critical retrieval, that is a critique that helps us see negative attitudes in the object of understanding that we want to appropriate, that is Christianity. And a hermeneutic of suspicion, that we credit Karl Marx for, and feminist theologians for. That will help us uncover in what we are being taught ideological elements that need to be removed. In the passage I quoted, there is that reference to darkness, people living in darkness. That is a good attitude. That's not a good attitude toward people you are conversing with. And when you talk about darkness and you assign yourself the job of civilization, removing these people out of this darkness where they are living to a place of light, that becomes an ideology. And by the way, don't quote me on this one. In our church, in the Catholic Church, there may be people who want women to become priests yesterday because they think their exclusion could be ideological. Don't quote me on this one. But yes, critique is necessary. And I read that dialogue between Gadamer and Jürgen Habermas and included in the second level of transformation a critique. Yes.
You've been listening to a lecture program from Creighton University on Noon Forum. We've heard a talk by Protas Okwalo, a Jesuit priest, holder of the Anna and Donald Waite Chair in Jesuit Education at Creighton, and visiting lecturer in Pastoral Theology and Missiology at the Capuchin Franciscan Institute of Philosophy and Theology in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. Father Okwalo has presented the annual Waite Chair Lecture. He spoke on the topic, Conversation, an Event of Faith Formation. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Wednesday afternoon, March 30th, 2016, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Cindy Workman, Director of Public Relations at Creighton University, for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 600 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.